some children find it difficult to remember what they studied, especially while answering their exam paper. This is a common problem. What guidance could you give?
One is to make sure the lessons are much more interesting and a lot more fun. They may not be able to remember their lessons, but they probably know all of the Sri Lankan cricket team. They know the lyrics of the most famous songs. And why is that? Because those things are enjoyable and fun. So number one, the teacher should make the lessons more enjoyable. Because when you have fun doing something, the mind pays more attention and the information gets stuck into the brain. It's one of the reasons when I teach, I tell jokes, I make it funny, make it lively, which means the teachings which you give are recalled. But number two is if you are in an examination, you're trying to find the answer, you all know that trying just drives the answer deeper into the unconscious. You have to be able to overcome your fear, relax, and allow the answers to come. The information is there in your brain, you just need to access it. And the harder you try, the more unlikely it is that you remember. So learning how to relax means you can recall information very, very easily. And the way to do that is through meditation. In many schools and universities, not Buddhist schools or universities, they teach meditation as a means to overcoming that problem. And if you don't teach that in Buddhist schools in Sri Lanka, it's a shame. You have these great resources, make use of them, and you will find they will enhance the academic performance of all of you.
This is the second question. Students find it difficult to cope with stress.
When you are studying, there comes a time when your brain is tired. You may have an assignment to complete for the following morning. And what many students do, certainly in Western countries, and I imagine it is the same here in Colombo, is that you push yourself, staring at the computer screen, hour after hour, producing very little at all. When your brain is tired, you have to rest it. After you've rested it, you will find that you can perform well afterwards. In a cricket match, the people play from the beginning of the day late till 6:30 without any breaks. Can a bowler bowl more than 6 balls in a row without sort of losing their energy and their skill? Of course not. Every person takes breaks in order to rest and restore their energy and their skill. And that is the problem with school children not knowing how to study, not knowing how to do their assignments. You work, and when you feel that your brain is not producing anything, you're tired, the brain is stuffed, stop and relax. If you can meditate, that's the most efficient way of relaxing. If you want to listen to some favorite music, do that. Anything to take your mind off the assignment or the work for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes. The simile, very old simile, is on Harvard Business School blog. How heavy is the glass of water? The longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. After 3 minutes, my arm will be in agony and it will be difficult to hold this water with comfort. All I need to do when this water gets too heavy to hold comfortably is just put it down and rest. I just put it down for 30 seconds or even less. When I pick it up afterwards, it's light and easy to hold. Your studies, when it gets too heavy, too uncomfortable to do with joy and ease, put it down. Rest. Listen to some music. Catch up on sort of, you know, the cricket scores, whatever you like. And after 5 or 10 minutes, go back to your work. Your mind will be fresh. And the 10 minutes you waste will be made up because you get 2 hours work done in 1 hour. And also of high quality. The meaning of stress is not how heavy the cup is. It's not knowing how to put it down and rest when you get tired. So can you do that? Before exams especially, the night before, put all the books away. Let your mum and dad lock your books away. Take away your computer so you can just relax and rest. Go out for dinner. Listen to some music. Anything to relax your mind. Go for a walk. Then the following morning, when you face your exams, the mind is fresh and you'll be able to do really well. That was the advice I recently gave to a Jewish school in Australia before their university entrance exams. And they got a letter a few months later. Thank you so much. The best results ever because of what you taught us.
Arguments between children and parents are fairly common. But the Buddha says on the topic of mutual understanding and trust between both parties.
You have to find a balance between trust and obedience and also challenging. Your children are growing into a different world than the parents grew up into. And questioning is also part of the Buddhist teachings. So please allow your children to question. Allow your children to explore. Allow your children even to make mistakes, because that is the way they learn. In modern society, some children are protected too much. They don't get little diseases in childhood, which means they don't build up their immunity for later life. They don't develop the qualities, what we call resilience. You don't allow them to play rough sports and get sort of bruised and cut. This is where we develop resilience in life, because when they leave the school or the university, it can be very tough. And they need to have that toughness. So when children challenge their parents, there is a time when the parents say, no, you've gone too far. And the children should respect that. But there are times the parent says, okay, give it a try, see what happens. So the child can learn why it was a wrong thing to do. But sometimes it's the right thing for a child to do. Some children of a Sri Lankan parent in Australia wanted to go to the nightclub with their friends. They were 18. And they were keeping precepts. They were good people. So I told their mother, please let them go to the nightclub. They're enjoying themselves and you can trust them. They're good children. And so their mum let them go to the nightclub and they had a wonderful time. And now one of the children is a doctor in London, the other one is some businesswoman, really nice kids. But sometimes you can be afraid. Oh, in a nightclub you meet bad people. If you don't go out at all, you don't meet anyone. And your poor children just feel so upset that their friends can go, but they can't. So please, you have to sometimes let your children explore and make mistakes. Trust them. And then they can actually find out their own way in life. Parents should be like birds. They sit on the eggs for days on end. They feed their young and teach them to fly. But as soon as the birds can fly, mother and father kick them out of the nest and they live by themselves. That's how parents should treat their children. You look after them for enough time, come out, 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 out. Find your own way in life. It's tough, but that's the only way people learn.
How do you handle disobedient children without creating a rift between parent and child?
Okay, they're only disobedient when you tell them things which they cannot do. So please change the orders. It's like telling a dog not to bark, and you blame the dog for being disobedient. Please understand what children are like, especially in today's world of society. And don't tell them things to do which is going to be the cause of disobedience. Sometimes the disobedience isn't the child's fault, it's you're telling them impossible things to obey. So please reconsider what you're saying. And as for children, you know, sometimes, you know, you've got to obey your parents because sometimes they do know better. But not always. So please, children, choose what you're going to disobey. Don't disobey everything. Just choose the ones you think you can get away with.
How should parents handle teenage relationships? And what advice can you give both parties on this topic?
Teenagers are going to have relationships. Sometimes I've asked parents, you know, is your daughter got a boyfriend? Oh, no, 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 no. And I know, yes, he has. I've seen them. So remember, sometimes your daughter, your son, will not tell mum and dad they're in a relationship. And that is the most dangerous of things. Parents, please, as they say, get real. Your children will have relationships. And you've got to have a good enough rapport with your children. They can come up and tell you, Mummy, I've got a boyfriend. And they won't be scared of telling you. They won't be scared of being scolded. So they can share with you. Young people, they have relationships much younger than in your age. And so they're going to have those relationships. And at such times, it's so delicate for a young woman or a young man having their first relationship, knowing what to do. And the last thing they want is to be scared of their mother and father. My own father was very open and very helpful. So he taught me, you know, what to do with a girl, how to talk with her and how to be attractive to her. I always remember he told me, this is strange things my father said which I remember. He always said, if you're at a party or a dance, he said, if a girl looks at you twice, she likes you. She might look at you and then just never look at you again. She looks at you again. He said, that's it. Simple things like that. That's what a father should be telling their son and daughter. And also, once you can have a relationship as a teenager with your mother and father's consent, they can protect you. Especially protect the boy and the girl from the problems with sex. The girl has to be strong enough not to just to give in to the boy in order to keep the boy as her boyfriend. You've got to be tough sometimes and don't always give in, because a lot of girls give in. Like, the boy wanted it. I didn't have much choice, Mum, and gets into big trouble. And the boy also has to be responsible. So many pregnancies happen simply because the boy and the girl go out together by themselves without the parents' consent and without the parents' help knowing how to have a relationship and having someone to go to for good advice. Teenage relationships, I'm not saying they're going to happen, they happen. They're happening right now. If you parents don't think it's happening, you are just blind. It's there, it will happen. Please tell your children, it's okay, you're going to do it, but be careful. Don't so prohibit what cannot be prohibited. Allow and care for it, protect it. They see it in the movies, they see it in the TV. So of course they're going to do it. Sri Lanka is not an isolated society. It's part of the world. But you be careful. When things are out there in the open, there's a possibility to control and to save the worst problems which come up from teenage relationships.
How can parents help a child deal with peer pressure?
One thing is to make sure they have good peers. So bring them to a Dhamma school. Even in Perth, we have a very, very good youth group. And it's amazing. We started a youth group so that, you know, Australian Buddhist youth can have good friends to hang out with. And it's got so popular that they're all pairing off and getting married. So this is not so much a Dhamma school for youth. It's like a dating club for youth. And I'm really happy that that's happening. Because, you know, a girl wants to have a really good boy. A boy wants to have a really trustworthy girl. So, by Buddhist societies, clubs or whatever, arranging little places where they can listen to some good teachings, be in a good environment, then the peer pressure they have is the peer pressure to do things like keep precepts and be kind and be loving. That's the best peer pressure. So you have to arrange those groups, have good peer pressure. Otherwise, if your child has got nowhere else to go, they will just sink to places where people seem to be having fun and games and they're having a good time, but sometimes it's bad influences as well. So if you want to solve the problem of peer pressure, create groups where the peer pressure is only positive.
Teen suicides are on the rise in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
How should this issue be handled by parents and teachers?
First of all, you will never know when a child is about to commit suicide. No one ever sees the signs because the signs are hidden. Many, many, many times I've had to deal with teenage suicides. I know the parents, I know the teachers. They're not suffering in school, they're not having problems with their relationships. And they suddenly decide just to kill themselves, and no one can predict it. So number one, if that ever happens to you, never ever feel guilty. If it's your friend at school, don't think that I could have done something. The truth is you cannot do anything. It's such a personal choice, and when they start thinking that way, they hide it even from their closest friends, let alone their parents. So number two, please no blame. And number two, if it does happen, an example I've given, it actually happened to be a Sri Lankan boy, 17 years of age. His parents found him on the end of a rope in their house in Perth in the morning, committed suicide. And as soon as they had finished with the police, they came to see me. They were obviously distressed. One of the first things I taught them, please, you are not to blame. It happens to so many people these days. Do not think that you could have prevented this. But even worse than that, the parents had heard from some monks, who I don't approve of at all, that if you commit suicide, it's such bad karma, you'll be reborn in hell or a very low realm. That is not true. In this particular case, in a couple of months' time, he was about to sit his university entrance exam. So I asked his parents, how many subjects is he taking for the university entrance? They said, four. How many papers, exams in each subject? They said, two papers in each subject. How many questions in each exam? They said, I don't know, maybe about eight. So I said, that's eight papers, eight questions, 64 questions he has to answer to get into university. What would happen if he answered 63 of those questions perfectly correct, 10 out of 10, but messed up and made a complete failure of the very last question? Would that mean he doesn't get to university? If you get 63 perfect answers out of 64, you'd probably go to Harvard or Cambridge or somewhere. That's a good result. And they got the point straight away. Your son has done 17 years of perfectly answering every question. He was a good boy. He's failed the last question and committed suicide. That does not mean he can't get a good rebirth. You cannot judge a life on the last act and ignore everything else that person has done. So now you understand, if a person does commit suicide, you don't want to add to the parent's grief by saying he's now going to get tortured in hell. That is not true and it's not helpful. But to prevent such suicides, a lot of time the parents need to spend more time with their children. I teach in many places. Once in Singapore, there was a very prominent suicide because the boy threw himself off an apartment on a high floor of a building. And he left his suicide note, which was in the front page of the paper the following day, which I saw. And his suicide note was chilling. He said, "All I wanted was to spend more time with my mother and father." It's not the money. It's not the education. It's not the things you give your children. What most children want more than anything is time with their mother as well as time with their father. That will cut the suicide rate down. You work so hard to try and get your kids a good education. But what they really need is just time with you.
According to Buddhism, what do you need to do to make a relationship work?
First of all, if you have a relationship, okay, this is for young people, boys and girls. Number one, young people, don't be so scared, especially boys. If you want to talk to a girl, invite her out, you think, "Oh my goodness, what if she says no? What if she doesn't like me?" And what she is thinking, you say, "Oh, what if he doesn't like me? Oh, please invite me out, please invite me out." Boys and girls are just the same. They're both so terrified. So please don't be afraid. Be confident. If you see someone you like, go and talk to her. Ask her out. The confidence is what is most attractive. The same with girls. If you like a boy and want him to ask you out, just go and sit next to him. Stand next to him. Give him an opportunity. And when he starts to mess up and say, give him another chance, because it's very difficult for a boy. So girls have to do their part to get a nice boy. But when you do have a relationship, I taught this to yesterday at the talk in, what's that, with the First Lady and the
working
together, yeah. Because I've done many, many talks with youth in many countries in the world, Buddhist youth. And I split the girls and boys aside. And I talk to the girls, these are 15 to 24 year olds. And I tell the girls, "What would you like in a boy? What type of boy would you like to go out with and even marry? Do they have to be tough and violent, really strong?" "Say, no, we don't like that." "Do they have to wear expensive clothes?" "No, we don't like that." "No, do they have to sort of drink alcohol and be sports?" "I said, no, we don't want that at all." What the girl said, "What we really like is someone we can trust. Someone who's a good person, someone who's kind and fun to be with." You don't need expensive clothes for that. You don't need to act like some tough guy. You need to go to Buddhist temple and learn precepts and kindness and fun. And that's what the girls wanted. The boys were really interested. Because I know as a young man myself, what do girls want? Can you please tell me just what I need to do to be attractive for you girls? That's what boys wanted to hear. And then the girls. What do you need to do to attract a nice guy? Do you have to wear expensive clothes and lots of makeup? And the boy said, "No, we're not interested in that. We want a girl, you know, who again we can trust, is fun to be with, who is kind. Really, and the boys and girls were listening to each other, and that for the first time, for many of them, they were actually getting some feedback, what they need to do to get a nice girlfriend, have a good relationship. Simple things like trust, kindness, virtue, makes you very attractive.
How can you understand the true nature of a person?
Ask their friends. Look, a boy and girl going out together. The girl will have so much makeup on, you don't know what she really looks like. And the boy will be just acting like he was in some play in school, trying to be the charming fellow. That's not who they really are. So first of all, if you want to have a relationship, find out who they really are. Go out together in the middle of the day, when the sun is shining. Because where do boys and girls go out to fall in love? They go out to restaurants, especially candlelit restaurants. It's romantic. They go out in the moonlight. Or they go out into dark nightclubs. Those things have a common denominator. They're all so dark, you cannot see the pimples on the girl's face. And you cannot see that the guy's ugly. Because in the candlelight, it is so sort of dark, you can actually imagine the guy in front of you is like some Hollywood film star. And the girl is just some really hot chick. There you see what you want to see. If you go out in the moon, in the full light of the day, you find out what she's really like, or what he's really like. But even then, they can act and pretend. That is why it's very good to ask the friends, what sort of girl is she like? Now, what does she do? Now, ask your friends if you're going out with a boy. Now, is he okay? Because he may look attractive to you, but you have the girlfriend, so don't go out with him. I've been out with him before, it's a pain in the neck. So please do that. It's like getting a PI, but PIs are too expensive. You just ask your friends. And that's what you find out, what they're really like.
Some believe that the best time to learn the Dhamma is when you are old. How can children benefit from learning the Dhamma?
I was only 16 when I learned Dhamma. It helped me pass my exams and get to university. It helped me have brilliant girlfriends. It helped me just be happy in life and be successful in life. Look, I'm just being open to the children, speaking in ways which Sri Lankan monks would never speak. When you go to a party or a dance, you meet a nice guy, you meet a nice girl. This was in the West. Now once you meet someone, dance a few times, you go in a corner for kissing and all that stuff. When I drank alcohol, which I did for the first year at university, I never remembered that. The best time in a party, when you had a nice girl, that you couldn't remember. Because you weren't there, you were drunk. Well, not drunk, but at least not fully aware. And once I gave that up, and you met a nice girl, you can enjoy every minute of your relationship. What would you like to do? Keeping precepts helped me enjoy my life much, much more. So this is why we can enhance our relationships just by, again, being honest. It really helped me in little things like having a good relationship with a girl. And when it ended, which all relationships end, some last a long time. I think the longest one I had was about 6 months. But when the relationship ended, instead of getting depressed and upset like many teenagers did, you realize that it's impermanent. I knew that from the very beginning. And instead of being really upset that I'd been dumped, I'd been let down, I thought, that we had a wonderful time together. Thank you so much, girlfriend. And I know there's always another one coming, available. So it's not the end of the world. So because I understood Dhamma, I never got depressed when we broke up. You got friends, you know, they have a nice girlfriend, and when it breaks up, they get so upset, especially girls. Now, please don't get so upset when you break up with a boy. Now, you've learned a lot, you've grown a lot. And as I tell to young people in Perth, you know, you really don't know how to love until you've had your heart broken a couple of times. It's actually, you may not agree with me at the time, but you have to have your heart broken until you can really appreciate a relationship. It's part of the learning. So that's how I encourage children, that if you understand this because you've heard Dhamma, your life is just so much better. I was 16. I didn't have the same opportunities. I said I made a terrible mistake by being born in England. I should have been born in Sri Lanka or some Thailand or some place where there was Buddhism. But some mistake, I don't know what I did wrong, I got born in England. So I had to, much harder to find the Dhamma. But when you did, it helped you so much, academically, socially, everything, it helped me.
Alcohol and drug abuse in children and adults is a growing problem. How should this be addressed?
Yeah, there we go. I already mentioned I took alcohol when I was a kid, and that was encouraged, even in Cambridge University, even by the professors. Once a year we had the scholars' dinner. I was a scholar there, I was one of the bright ones, even in Cambridge. And everyone got drunk. Even you sat next to a Nobel Prize winning chemist, he got drunk too. And that's these people aren't intelligent. They're really great in chemistry, but in life getting drunk like that, and it really shocked me just how bad that was. That's when I gave up alcohol. And as for drugs, this was in the 60s, there was lots and lots of drugs available, even in Cambridge, as there is in Colombo. The drugs are there. What protected me was the Dhamma. Because I heard straight away that alcohol and drugs were against the precepts. And I had enough respect, you know, that this Buddha was a very wise person. Why did he say it was wrong? Because all my friends said it was fun. Now, as a young man, because maybe Buddhism, or maybe that's why I chose Buddhism, I was going to question everything. I was not going to follow what my parents said, not even what my friends said, until I could work it out for myself and see the truth in it. That rebelliousness stopped me taking drugs. I looked at the people who did take drugs, and they were acting so stupidly. I did not want to be like that. And I was strong enough to say, no, I'm not taking drugs, even though many of my friends did. One of my best friends, Adam, he was at school together, we went to Cambridge together. He was studying medicine at Jesus College. He became a heroin addict. And I saw him again about 10 years ago. He could have been this amazing doctor, and he was just scraping by a living by mowing people's gardens. And when I saw that, you can actually see, just heroin not just took away his career, but took away his opportunity to help and heal so many hundreds, maybe thousands of people. It's not fun. It's not cool. It is damn stupid. And I swore there. Damn stupid, taking drugs. So stand up for yourself. Be rebellious. All your friends may take some ice. You say, no, I will not. I don't want to hurt myself. And the other thing which really helped me, you know, I really love my parents. All children do. And I just couldn't hurt my parents. One day another of my friends, he was taking marijuana while he was at school. And again, this was a top school in West London. And the headmaster found out, told his parents, and he said it hurt his parents so much to find out their child was taking marijuana. And when I heard how he had caused so much pain to his mum and dad, I just couldn't do that to my parents. I really cared for my mother and father, as most children do. And if they found out you're taking drugs, that's like putting a dagger in their heart and turning it. That really, really, really hurts them. I just couldn't do that. So that's the other reason. It was not just respect because of some sort of tradition. It was real respect for my parents. I loved them because they sacrificed so much for me, and I knew that. So that's the reasons why I could not take drugs. I just couldn't do it. I wanted to experiment, but no, I cannot hurt my parents. So respect for parents, or rather say love for parents, that stops you. Please don't hurt your mum and dad.
Today's children have easy access to alcohol, pornography and drugs. How should parents help their children make informed decisions with regard to withstanding peer pressure and assuming social norms?
One thing parents can do in Sri Lanka is not take alcohol themselves. Not keep alcohol in their house to give to their visitors. How on earth do you think you're going to stop your children taking alcohol and drugs when mum and dad have alcohol? How can you expect your children not to take alcohol and drugs when father is taking the worst drug in the world, according to the London School of Economics, alcohol? So one of the problems comes from the parents. You are hypocrites if you expect your children not to take alcohol and drugs when you take alcohol yourselves and give it to your friends. Your house should not have alcohol in it if you're a Buddhist. And you're not only keeping the five precepts, you're setting an example to others to protect our children from also taking alcohol and other drugs. Children rightly argue, it's a good argument, what's the difference? A drug, alcohol, they are the same. Actually, alcohol is worse, according to the evidence. What's the difference? And it's an argument which parents really have no ground to answer, unless the parents give up alcohol themselves. It's by example we teach people. You cannot expect to tell your children to do one thing when you're not doing it yourself. So the onus now is on the parents to clean up their act. And then, trying to keep it away from, unfortunately, in places like the United States, it's available in the schools, at drugs, as it was when I was a young man. Don't ever think, no, not in our school, we have a top school in Colombo. Never think that. It's always going to be there. The only way you can prevent it is by being good parents and not taking alcohol yourself and teaching your kids self-respect and strength. Don't always criticize and put down your kids. Build them up. Bring out their confidence. You can imagine if a coach of the Sri Lankan cricket team kept on telling them, you're going to lose. The other team's much better than you. You're hopeless. You're terrible. If a coach did that to the Sri Lankan cricket team, would they ever win? The coach has to build up the team. Even sometimes the coach has to lie. You know, you can beat these people. Even the coach says, no way. You can win. Yes, give it a try. Because when you build up that self-belief, sometimes surprises happen. And the underdogs win. That's what you have to do with your kids. Build up their confidence, their self-esteem, so that they can have the inner strength to say no. Otherwise, they'll be just so weak because their parents have weakened them, always telling them off, that they will just succumb. So those are two things you can do.
How important is for you to get involved in social service?
It's very helpful for kids to get involved in some sort of community action or service. You may know the International Baccalaureate. Do they have the baccalaureate here in Sri Lanka? Yeah, much better than O levels and A levels. Because part of that is doing some community service. And you get to university or you fail just on how you do that community service. Not only is that good for the communities, developing the emotional intelligence, which is that, who did the book on emotional intelligence? Daniel Goleman. He's a Buddhist. He was a person who did a very simple bit of research. If you get O levels, A levels, and get a good degree at a good university, are you successful in life? Is your academic performance at school and university an accurate indicator of success in life? He said, no, it wasn't. People who get good A levels and good degrees, they failed in life. But what he did find was another indicator, not IQ, but EQ, emotional intelligence. Those people at school and university who had good friends, who had self-esteem, who had fun, had like a good social balance in their life, they are the ones who became the success stories in life. The CEOs of big companies, the people who succeeded where other people wouldn't. He said emotional intelligence was the indicator of success. So it's not just O levels and A levels, chemistry and English. It's the other stuff in life. Is where you train your children to have success. And part of that community service is learning emotional intelligence. It's essential if you want children to be successful in life. Even more so than extra tuition. Very good. Now, was that okay? Not the parents, the kids. Because this was about kids, teenagers. So those are the ones I was looking at, as you saw. And those are the ones I was looking at your reactions to what I was saying, to see whether I was hitting the spot or not. What would you like to add to some of those questions? Who knows about teenagers more than teenagers? What do you think of what I said? Can you improve upon it? How would you suggest that we equip teenagers to resist alcohol and drugs? What do you think? You're going to be studying English. You've got to present. So what do you think? Problems with teenagers and how they're solved. Are parents too controlling? Be honest. You have your opportunity now. They always are. Sometimes it feels really hard as a young girl. Sometimes you don't feel that you're trusted enough. You say, Mom, look, I know what I'm doing. If I don't, I have to find out by myself. So go out there and have a good time. Enjoy and develop emotional intelligence. That will save you more than anything else. How many times do you tell them off compared to how many times you tell them they're good kids? Please keep a record. Have a little book, and every time you tell your kid off, tick one side of the ledger. Every time you tell your kid what a good kid they are, tick the other side of the ledger. You'd be surprised. The telling off is far greater than the times you praise your kids. Even though mum and dad know their kids are good kids, but you don't tell them. They need to be told again and again and again. Otherwise, you may lose them. A So was that okay for you? I did talk over a lot because it's also the people listening. So you're very happy to edit it and just take out the pith. Okay, very good. So 12 questions. How did I go? 12 out of 12? 6 out of 12? Only one?